The Multiple Sclerosis Society of Canada announced the launch of End MS, a 3-year national campaign with a goal of raising $60 million to fund research activities and establish the End MS Research and Training Network. The network is a first in the MS community and represents an immediate, dedicated investment to advance Canada's leadership position in MS research. The goal of the End MS Research and Training Network is to accelerate research in ending multiple sclerosis, to end multiple sclerosis, and it will help to attract and train young researchers and retain seasoned scientists in an effort to speed the pace of discovery. And I'm pleased to welcome back to our show Dr. Mark Friedman, senior scientist at the Ottawa Health Research Institute, director of the Ottawa Hospital MS Clinic, and professor at the University of Ottawa. Good afternoon.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing just great, thanks, and I understand you're having a lovely time today.
Beautiful day. Finally.
No kidding. I wanted to ask you to start off, to get the scope of MS in Canada. How many people have MS in Canada?
We don't have the latest figures, but we're looking at probably around 50,000 people.
Are there specific risk factors for the disease, and what makes this disease a priority in terms of who is affected?
Well, we know that there are genes that probably confer some degree of susceptibility, and we've been hunting for the gene or group of genes now for a couple of decades, and we've got some leads. And it's interesting that each of those genes that have had the highest scores are linked to the immune system, which makes us wonder, is this a faulty immune system, mm-hmm. or is there something about the way the immune system develops in people? Because certainly, having the genes alone are not enough. And that raises the notion of something in the environment, since the immune system reacts with the environment as we grow. And one of the features that has stood the test of time seems to be latitude as a risk factor. So the farther you get from the equator, be it in the northern or southern hemisphere, the higher the incidence, making people postulate things such as now the latest being vitamin D mm-hmm. and lack of exposure and enough of activated vitamin D throughout the year, which would be linked to incidences of development of MS or even relapses, because you can almost correlate mm-hmm. the lower levels of vitamin D in people with the onset of the disease, it tending to be more prominent in spring and fall, sort of following these episodes of low vitamin D as an onset of illness. But that alone is not going to account mm-hmm. for it, because there's obviously cases where there's plenty of vitamin D exposure. So that's just one factor. Amongst a number of unknowns, we keep looking for viruses. One of the latest ones that keeps coming around and around is the Epstein-Barr virus or herpes virus family of viruses, and just exactly how they may spur on an autoimmune process that directs itself very specifically to the brain is still unknown. But there have been some interesting leads, but so far nothing you can eat or drink or things mm-hmm. that we can actually manipulate to really indicate a true risk factor.
Now, this disease is, I believe, the most common neurological disease for people in their 20s, is it not?
Well, certainly acquired. The commonest cause for neurological disability in that age group is probably trauma, mm-hmm. motor vehicle accidents being probably up there as number one. But as an acquired neurological disease, it is the most common. And what makes it so important to treat and treat when it presents is because it looks like very early on we have opportunities to treat with the current medications. They make the best effect. They have the greatest effect if given early in the course of disease. But once you're in a stage like most neurodegenerative mm-hmm. diseases where you're just sort of into a progression, I think the horse is out of the barn and the current therapies are not going to be effective enough. And so this is not something that's going to come and go for most people. It's a chronic disease that builds over many, many years. And if you can get to it early enough in a younger person, you might be able to save them from progression 20, 30 years down the road. But they're going to have to live with this illness their whole life.
Now, it seems that, as you mentioned, there are speculative factors contributing to MS, latitude being a particular one. that seems to be associated. The further north you go or further south you go from the equator, you tend to see more incidence of MS. The pathophysiology of the disease, though, it seems that there you have it's sort of two ends of this timeline. You have the beginning part where there's speculation, and then you have the end result and the pathophysiology of the disease. And so for our listeners, can you describe what actually happens when the sequence is activated?
Well, we're guessing, of course. We don't know exactly what happens. That would be akin to really figuring out the triggers of the disease and maybe being able at that point to do something about it. But based on our understanding and creation of artificial models, it looks like something misdirects the immune system to believe that one element of myelin, the insulation of the wires of the central nervous system, is foreign. And once the immune system recognizes it as foreign, it learns, and it tries to keep that important interaction in memory. For instance, if it was a nasty virus or bug, so that every time it sees it, it would react to eliminate that from the body. That's what the immune system does. But if it mistakenly identifies a self-body part, in this case a part of the myelin is foreign, any time the immune system is exposed to this myelin, it will launch an immune attack. And sometimes that comes out as relapses. Sometimes we have to use techniques such as MRI to pick up these new events. So it is an early on, from what we can see, an inflammatory immune system-directed response against the central nervous system myelin, and eventually unravels these wires, leaves them open, and then it's very speculative, but it one of two things. Mm-hmm. Either this exposed wire is now open to attack by the immune system, which it normally wouldn't be because it's normally protected by insulation, or there's some kind of a trophic factor which it maintains this wire's integrity, and somehow the inflammation gets rid of that trophic factor, and as a result, after a time, we don't know what that critical time is, but after a certain amount of time of the wire being exposed, it'll retract, and eventually the neuron that gave rise to that wire will die.
We're in conversation with Dr. Mark Friedman, senior scientist at the Ottawa Health Research Institute, director of the Ottawa Hospital MS Clinic, and professor at the University of Ottawa. And when we come back, I want to get into how people can recognize or at least have a suspicion to get checked if they think they have MS, and also the End MS campaign and what MS research has produced so far in terms of new treatments and new advances and understanding how the disease tends to produce itself and how effective treatments are. And as Dr. Friedman mentioned, that the earlier things are recognized and the earlier you treat, the better the outcome, or at least maximizing your outcome, a positive outcome, is possible. When we come back, we'll be speaking to Dr. Mark Friedman. You're listening to Sunday House Call. I'm Dr. Barry Dworkin. Conversation with Dr. Mark Friedman, senior scientist at the Ottawa Health Research Institute, director of the Ottawa Hospital MS Clinic, and professor at the University of Ottawa. And Dr. Friedman, I wanted to talk about the End MS campaign to start off. And when we last spoke about 3 years ago, we reviewed the ongoing clinical trials and advances in MS research. How is the End MS campaign going to continue the learning and discovery process? What does it want to do?
Well, I think that if we're going to draw an analogy, we could do so for like a good hockey team. Mm-hmm. You know, these players, they're not going to just come out of the air as experts. It's quite clear that you have to develop them and nurture them from junior level right through a good farm team, and eventually you're going to have your pro players that you can pick and choose who are really key. And the same thing will be true for a research network. We recognize that there are many, many challenges facing physicians today, especially neurologists. There are other areas of interest that will lure them. You're getting a fresh person out of 7 years of specialty. Why would they want to then spend a couple of extra years working in a fellowship and a research project and dedicate their careers towards something like multiple sclerosis? Mm-hmm. Something's got to bring them into the system. What about good young scientists? They have many areas they could explore. What's the attraction to multiple sclerosis? And if we don't bring in these young researchers, even when they're as early as medical students or early university years, if they're going to go strictly to a research career, they're going to go elsewhere. And it was clear that the people who are doing the research today, it's very hard to then imagine retiring. You know, somebody's got to take my place, and we're trying very hard, desperately, to get some of the young neurology residents geared up to do MS. And there's just not enough of an attraction for them. So this NMS network is saying, okay, we recognize that we got to start really early. What's going to attract them? Well, the first thing you're going to do is throw some resources at them. Say to them, we'll get you through your undergrad. We'll get you through a fellowship. We'll get you through your residency. We'll guarantee you some funds as a fellow. You want to go elsewhere to learn something, bring it back to Canada? We'll support you. In fact, we'll even, if you're good enough, give you a guaranteed salary, which is almost unheard of today, a guaranteed salary to take an academic position in. And if you're a university and you're looking for new faculty and they are coming to you with a salary package and all you have to do is dedicate some space and guarantee that if this researcher is truly successful that they'll support them, it's a lot easier to sell yourself coming in with one of these awards. And so we're going to try to attract then some of the best people out there to focus their interests both from a pure science side or from a clinical side to help us find the cure for this disease.
Now, with that in mind, research that has been ongoing and your research and the years and in fact decades of research that has so far produced some treatments for MS, for our listeners, how have things changed in 5 or 10 years with regards to research and application of that research?
Well, probably the most important thing, and it may have been intuitively obvious to all of us today when we look back, is that the treatments that we have direct itself against these inflammatory events. And you can see inflammation in various stages of the illness, even right into early stages of progression. But if you try treating that inflammation at that stage, more times than not, the progression continues, and we've been very discouraged by that type of treatment coming in. Mm-hmm. However, we've had enough patients coming in fairly early in the course of disease now that people are recognizing there are treatments for MS. The diagnosis is being made earlier, and the treatments are being given earlier. And what we're seeing are quite startling. The numbers that we saw in terms of reducing the inflammatory events, say 10 or 15 years ago when the pivotal trials came out with the first agents we have, those numbers are nearly twice as good in the last 5 to 10 years. And the drugs have not changed. Mm-hmm. So obviously what has happened is that we've been able to get in there fairly early, and that seems to almost nip it in the bud for many of the patients, and they've enjoyed what looks like a much easier time of the disease early on, and we're just hoping that that now translates into a better long-term prognosis.
How do people recognize MS, and how is it being diagnosed earlier? What are some of the factors or key signs and symptoms that people should keep in mind, and physicians as well, in order to catch this early so that they can get the treatment if necessary?
Well, typically they're the onset of new neurological symptoms, and I think that we can learn very carefully from our stroke colleagues who went out very aggressively and tried to teach people what the early signs of a stroke are, because there, really the emphasis is on early treatment. In fact, we're talking hours in order to try to make a difference in the outcome. But we learned from them, and we added to that the fact that these onset of these types of symptoms that you get with MS are not so hyperacute as a stroke, but they will develop over 2 to 3 days. And probably there's some very classical presentations, such as the optic neuritis, where you lose central vision in one eye and there's a little bit of pain when you move the eyes around. You can complain of a headache. And people can usually brush that off as though maybe it's a dirty contact lens or there's something wrong with my glasses. But once it's clear that you close one eye and you can't see out of the other one, you know you've had optic neuritis. You're going to seek attention for that. 20 years ago, the ophthalmologist who saw you probably would have said, yeah, you got a little inflammation of your optic nerve. Don't worry. It'll get better. And that would be the end of the story. But today, the ophthalmologists are well aware this could be the early signs of optic neuritis, and they're going to be referred fairly quickly to a neurologist and a workup done. And we can identify these people as first-onset, high-risk cases of developing MS, and we can start therapy right there. We don't need to wait for two or three attacks before we're sure of the illness. We can identify somebody who's truly at high risk, and we've shown with numerous studies now that the drugs are all very effective at that stage.
It's interesting you mention optic neuritis, because we had a caller, I believe it was last week, that called and asked about optic neuritis. He was from the United States, calling in from Michigan, or Ohio or Michigan, and said that he was diagnosed with optic neuritis and given steroids, and that was it. There was no further consult to a neurologist, to anybody who could ascertain whether this person had MS. And I said to him, you know, you have to get assessed for MS because of this. Because he was saying, well, what other treatments are there? I said, well, there are a lot of other treatments, especially if there's MS.
Well, that's the beauty of the Canadian program. We're all of our MS centers are mostly centralized and run out of very high specialty clinics. So if you can, even a family doctor, recognize these early signs and call the MS center, most of us have the ability to see patients fairly quickly, especially if it's early onset. Other symptoms could be those things that you just kind of brush off. It wouldn't be uncommon to start developing numb toes and feet and blame them on those new shoes you bought last week and expect that it's just going to get better, and sure enough, it does. But that could have been what we call a transverse myelitis. Symptoms can be very subtle.
Right.
But the point is that they tend to progress, and they get worse over 2 to 3 days or even a week or so. And if that's what's happening, that's why you need to be seen right away.
Now, with regards to the ongoing clinical trials and specific trials that are going on, for our listeners, if they want to get involved with the clinical trials and participate in forwarding research into MS, how would they go about doing this?
Well, probably all the trials are advertised through the Multiple Sclerosis Society of Canada's website, so that's an easy way. And if they're advertised there, they're also identified which clinics in the country are running those trials. We've become overrun, literally, by clinical trials and the demand to do them. And a large clinic like ours, we probably have about 25 trials going on, and I'm not participating in all of them. We just don't have the patient population that can do all these trials. So there's tremendous amount of choices out there today for individuals, and really doing nothing about MS should not be one of the options.
Dr. Mark Friedman is senior scientist at the Ottawa Health Research Institute, director of the Ottawa Hospital Multiple Sclerosis Clinic, and professor at the University of Ottawa. And Dr. Friedman, I'd like to thank you once again for coming on to the show discussing MS. And I'd love to have you back again, especially when it comes time for the MS Bike Tour, to talk about this a bit more and to generate some more interest and for people to donate to hopefully cure this disease.
Always a pleasure, Barry. Thank you.
All the best.
You're listening to Dr. Barry Dworkin on Sunday House Call.